Today on Fellowship in the Word, Pastor Bill Gebhardt challenges you to become a fully functioning follower of Jesus Christ.
Let me ask you a question. You ready to die? Are you ready to die? You see, it's like, we don't talk about that in polite society. We don't want to talk about it. Do you ever come to grips with death? No matter what age you are in this room right now, there are people this day that would die your age. It happens. There's no escaping.
Thank you for joining us today on this edition of Fellowship in the Word with Pastor Bill Gebhardt. Fellowship in the Word is the radio ministry of Fellowship Bible Church, located in Metairie, Louisiana. Let's join Pastor Bill Gebhardt now as once again he shows us how God's Word meets our world.
I believe the desire of any parent is that your children will become better equipped to navigate themselves more smoothly through this life. One thing's for sure, though, that if those parents are going to be successful, they need to establish a really clear foundation for their children. As a matter of fact, if any of us are to live the lives that God intended us to live, we need to live them on the basis of a solid foundation. That's my goal this morning. I want to give you six basic truths of how to live your life based on a really solid foundation. I also want to ask you six diagnostic questions for you to discern whether you really incorporate that in your life yourself. All of it's found in one single psalm. Open your Bibles to Psalm 90. Psalm 90. With this psalm, everything is said sort of in the superscription of the psalm. It says a prayer of Moses, the man of God. This is the only psalm that Moses wrote. David is given direct responsibility for 75 psalms, Asaph 12. Heman and Ethan each had one, and there's about 60 that are unknown. David probably wrote several of those. But this is the only one that Moses wrote. What's the importance of that? This is the first psalm ever written. This is 500-600 years before David writes. This psalm is written while Moses is in the wilderness. He's led the people out. They are now in the process of, they were heading to the promised land. And if you remember, they went to a place like called Kadesh Barnea. And when they got there, they sent spies into the land. 10 of them came back and said, we can't do it. 2 of them, Caleb and Joshua, said, we need to go into the land. The people didn't. And God pronounced the fact that everybody 20 years old or older of that generation were going to die in the wilderness. And so they don't go into the promised land for about 40 years. That's the context of which Moses is writing this. Look at the first two verses. He says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were born, or you gave birth to the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. The first foundational truth is simply this. God is great. God is great. Notice he says, Lord, first word. It's not Yahweh. It's Adonai. He uses that term because he's talking about creator, sovereign, Lord. He said, Lord, you have been our dwelling place. That's an interesting thing, a very difficult word. It's rare in Hebrew. The word is meon in Hebrew. The Berkeley translation translates this word home. Probably the best translation is the word refuge. The idea is, he says, you have been our dwelling place. You have been our home. You have been our refuge. Notice, in all generations. He said, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter if we were in the wilderness, you're our refuge. It doesn't matter if we were 400 years in Egypt as slaves, you are our refuge. You are our home. He says, God, that's how you are. You're not just the creator, but you're personal. You have a relationship with us. He then says, before the mountains were born, you gave birth to the earth and the world. You're the creator, God, the great uncaused cause. He says, you are an everlasting God. You are eternal. In other words, God is great. That's how he starts this out. God is great. The question I have for you is this. Are you rightly related to God? Now, I don't mean necessarily your own idea of God. I don't mean that. I mean in a very specific way, as specifically as Jesus said it. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one will come to the Father but through me. Those are words I believe with all my heart. And the question you have is, have you done that? Have you put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ and his finished work on the cross? Pastor Brad talked about that, that as soon as these children are old enough to truly understand the gospel, the parents' responsibility is to present that gospel as clearly as they can so that those children can get rightly related to God. You see, when you have a relationship with God, it gives your life perspective. If you don't have God in your life and you live out there in that real world, there's a lot of perplexity. There's a lot of things out there that don't make sense. There's a lot of things that aren't going well. You don't have to believe me for it. You can just watch the news. But when you have God as a perspective, he sort of centers you in almost every possible way. God then sort of becomes the North Star by which you navigate your life, as mariners had for centuries, because of a relationship with God. God is great. Now, notice verses 3 to 6. He says, you turn man back into dust and say, return, O children of men. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it passes by or as a watch in the night. You have swept them away like a flood. They fall asleep. In the morning they are like grass which sprouts anew, and in the morning it flourishes and sprouts anew, and toward the evening it fades and withers away. God is great. Here's the second truth. Life is short. Life is short. Notice that Moses has a tremendous perspective of death that you and I would never have. Moses led the people out of Egypt, somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million people. Now, just the journey alone would have been arduous for many of them. But remember, because of their failure at Kadesh Barnea, everyone 20 years old or older was going to die in the next 40 years before they go into the promised land. So if you project that out, as many have, somewhere around 1 million or so people died in those 40 years. That you have to understand that. That means that at the camp of Israel, they had 70 to 100 funerals every day. Every day for 40 years, 70 to 100 funerals. Now that is the ringing bell of death. You see, Moses has got a really good picture of that. He says, look how quickly this happens. He says to him, he said, you have swept them away like a flood. It came so suddenly for many of them. But notice it from God's perspective. Verse 4, for 1,000 years in your sight is like yesterday when it passes by, or a watch in the night, which is 3 hours. He said 1,000 years is like 3 hours. Now, Moses, 1,000 is a huge number for Moses. If he were alive today, he might say 1,000,000 years is like 3 hours, or 1,000,000,000 years is like 3 hours. It is to God. He's eternal. You see, God lives, exists outside of time. Time is a creation of God. He is eternal. Now, remember, man was created to live eternally. Man was created to be eternal. But the problem is now we have to deal with what we call death. And he says, death can come fast. Life is short. Let me ask you a question. You ready to die? Are you ready to die? You see, it's like, we don't talk about that in polite society. We don't want to talk about it. Do you ever come to grips with death? No matter what age you are in this room right now, there are people this day that will die your age. It happens. There's no escaping it. You see, have you come to grips with death? As I say every time I teach on it, the statistics on death are really impressive. 1 out of 1 die. Okay? That's the truth of it. That's the way it works. And when you think about it from that perspective, I'd love to say I can guarantee that everybody in this room will be here next year at this date. I couldn't guarantee that. In fact, over all the years I've been here, I'm almost certain some of us will not be. Boy, that's an important thing to teach your children. Life is short. You see, it is really short. In other words, you only have a certain amount of time to spend, and that's all there is for you. God is great. Life is short. And now we're going to see why life is short, beginning in verse 7. He says, for we have been consumed by your anger, and by your wrath we have been dismayed. You have placed our iniquities before you and our secret sins in light of your presence. All of our days have declined in your fury. We have finished our years like a sigh. He said, as for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due strength, 80 years. Yet their pride is but labor and sorrow, for soon it is gone and we fly away. He said, who understands the power of your anger and your fury according to the fear that is due you? God is great. Life is short. Sin is serious. Sin is serious. That's why life is short. Sin is serious. Moses explains here why life is short. As I said earlier, death was not part of the original plan. That came about because of the fall. Sin separates mankind from God. You see, the result is he's holy and righteous, and we are not. His light exposes our darkness. Look what he says in verse 8. He says, you have placed our iniquities, that's our outward sins, before you, our secret sins in light of your presence. Sin. We all sin. Wow. You know, when I read verse 9, he says, for all of our days have declined in your fury. We have finished our years like a sigh. Wow. You know, Moses came a long time before modern existentialism and the philosophy of the day. But the philosophy of the modern existential philosophers is pretty much life stinks and then you die. And that's pretty much it. They've studied philosophy for 6,000 years and that's what they come up with. Moses says, you know, you're kind of right. He says it a little bit differently. Moses says, you know what? Life's hard. And then you die. Wow. It's like, that's shocking. That's real. That's the way life works. He said, life is hard. And he says, and then you die. Remember, he said that in Galatians, God is not mocked. Whatever a man soweth, so shall he reap. Now, the reason that that's an important thing to teach people now is, especially young people, is that we live in a day and age where if you go out there and you listen to our culture, there's no such thing as sin. There's no such thing. You've never will hear national newscaster, anybody talking about sin. It's our culture denies it. There's no such thing. No, we make mistakes. You see, we tell white lies. By the way, you know what a white lie is, don't you? It's a lie. All right? Just to clear that up for you. You see, we just make mistakes. But God's not mocked. So we live in a culture that says there really is no sin. We also live in a culture with unprecedented murder rates. Unprecedented suicide rate. Domestic abuse is everywhere. Psychotherapy, a whole industry in our country. Prescription drugs in order to cope with our mistakes. That's our culture. It denies the idea that there is sin. The question I have is simply this. Do you take your sin seriously? I mean that. Do you take it seriously? You just brush by it. When is the last time, like David, you would have said this? God, search me. Know my heart. Try me. Know my thoughts. See if there's any sinful way in me. When's the last time you did that? You see, how seriously do you take sin? Moses says it's serious. God is great. Life is short. Sin is serious. And thankfully, wisdom is essential. Look at verse 12. He said, so teach us to number our days, that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. You see, in order to navigate in this world, whether you're just being dedicated, or you're a child, or a teenager, or a young adult, or pushing right along, you need wisdom. You see, you really need wisdom. Wisdom is the skill for living. It's a supernatural skill in Scripture that God imparts to us. If there would be one thing I would ever pray for my own children, it'd be that they have some sense of wisdom. So often, by the way, we miss this. So often people in our culture, and probably many of us, what we want for our children is knowledge. You see, I'm going to make sure you get a really good education. That's what's really important, to get a really good education. Yeah, you'll get a lot of knowledge, but you might not get any wisdom at all. Really none in some places. It's not a matter of wisdom. You see, we need wisdom. Children need wisdom. Adults need wisdom. We need the skill in order to live. Notice he starts that out by saying, so teach us the number of days. Again, we're back to a limited amount of opportunities. He said 70. If you're lucky, 80. Wow. You know, when I was younger, I had a goal. Now, you know, I knew it's a stupid goal in the sense that I didn't have anything to do with it. But I wanted to make it to 70. Okay, that was just a goal I had in mind, just off the top of my head. And by the way, when I was younger, that seemed so far out there. It was just like, wow, it's like eternity. It's not. Okay. I have revised my goal. Okay. It's a little bit different now. What's happening? When you're older, you start numbering your days. You see that. Give me an example. If you're 25 right now, you have 16,275 days on average left. If you're 35, you have 12,775 days. If you're 45, you have 9,175 days. If you're 55, you have 5,575 days. If you're 65, you have less than 2,000 days on average. I could go on, but I get depressed if I go on. And by the way, If you're past 80, we have a word for you in New Orleans. You're in the lagniap time of life, okay? That's a little bit different time for you. It happens. Moses was 120. He understood that, but he understood this idea that you have a limited amount of time. So the question is, am I spending my life or am I investing my life? That's what it comes down to. Do you spend your life or do you invest your life? You see, it always comes down to, if you're going to invest your life, it always comes down to the same thing. And boy, what you want to impart on your children, invest in relationships. First, invest in a vertical relationship with God. Let him speak to you in his word and you speak to him in prayer. Walk with him every day. And on the horizontal level, invest in people. We spend so much time investing in stuff, investing in work, investing in things. But you need to invest in people. And especially for these parents that are dedicating children. Years ago, and it's finally been diminished a little bit. I don't know exactly why, but I'm glad it is. But when I was a little bit younger, they used to say something that was quite interesting. They'd always talk about when you parented, the key to parenting is investing quality time. That's the key. Quality time. That's the key. I don't think that's true. I think the key to parenting is investing quantity time. I think the whole idea of investing only quality time is a way people alleviate guilt because they don't spend enough time with their kids. You have to spend time. See, you have to spend time. You're married to someone, spend time with them. You have to spend time. If somebody's your friend, you have to spend time with your friend. You have to spend time. It has to be something. You have to invest. So are you spending your life or are you investing your life? But it does get better. God is great. Life is short. Sin is serious. Wisdom is essential. But maybe the most important thing is found in verses 13 to 15. Grace is available. Boy, am I thankful for this. Do return, O Lord. How long will it be? And be sorry for your servants. O satisfy us in the morning with your loving kindness. As you know, if you're here very often, that's my favorite word in the Old Testament. That's the word hesed. There's no English word for it. Loving kindness doesn't even come close. It's the word of loyal love. It's the word of grace, unconditional grace. It's the word of mercy. It's a word for loyalty. That's what this word is. It's a great word. Oh, satisfy us in the morning with your grace, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Don't forget, where are they? They are in the wilderness. Where were they? They were in slavery. He says, you know what? Because of your grace, we can still sing for joy every single day. It's not circumstantial. Make us glad according to the days that you have afflicted us and the years that we have seen evil. Wow, that's incredible. The grace of God. What is that? Now, we have all kinds of things, unmerited favor, gift, those type of things. Listen carefully as I read what Max Lucado writes, and as only Max could. He said, the meaning of life, the wasted years of life, the poor choices of life, God answers the mess of life with one word, grace. We talk as though we understand the term. He said, the bank will give us a grace period. A seedy politician falls from grace. Musicians speak of the grace note. We describe an actress as gracious, a dancer as graceful. We use the word for hospitals and baby girls and kings and pre-meal prayers. We talk as though we know what grace means, especially at church. Grace is the songs we sing and the Bible verses we read. Grace shares the church parsonage with its cousins, forgiveness and faith and fellowship. Preachers explain it. Hymns proclaim it. Seminaries teach it. But do we really understand it? He then says this, I think grace is God as a heart surgeon, cracking open your chest, removing your heart, poisoned as it was with your pride and pain and sin, and replacing it with his own. Rather than to tell you to change, he creates the change. Do you clean up so that he will accept you? No. He accepts you, and then he begins to clean you up. His dream isn't just to get you into heaven, but to get heaven into you. What a difference this makes. Can't forgive your enemy? Can't face tomorrow? Can't forgive your past? Christ can. He said, and he's on the move. Forgiven people, forgiving people. Deep sighs of relief. Stumbles of plenty, but never despair. Grace is everything Jesus. Grace lives because Jesus lives. Grace works because Jesus works. Grace matters because Jesus matters. He placed a term limit on sin and then danced a victory dance in the graveyard. To be saved by grace is to be saved by Jesus, not by an idea, not by doctrine, not by a creed, or by church membership, but by Jesus himself. Grace hugged the stink out of the prodigal son. It scared the hate out of the apostle Paul, and it pledges to do the same in you and me. If you fear that you've written too many checks on God's kindness account, drag regrets around you like a broken bumper on your car, huff and puff more than you delight in rest, and most of all, if you wonder whether God can do something with the mess that is your life, then grace is what you need. He's right. It's grace. Grace and mercy are available. The question is simply this. Am I experiencing the joy of the Lord in my life? Remember, that's what he said. Satisfy us with the morning of your loving kindness, that we may sing for joy and be glad all of our days. Is that how you are? You see, does grace mark your life? The unmerited favor of God? Does mercy mark your life where you don't get what you deserve? Grace getting what you don't deserve. The loyal love of God, the hesed of God. Do you experience that? It always results in the same thing. It's not circumstantial at all. Ask yourself this. When you wake up in the morning, do you bathe yourself in the love and the grace and the mercy of God? You should. It alleviates guilt, fear, all those kinds of things. God is great. Life is short. Sin is serious. Wisdom is essential, and grace and mercy are available. And the last one, and rightly so, success is possible. For all those little lives, success is possible. For your life and mine, success is possible. Success. I love that. He says, let your work, in verse 16, appear to your servants and your majesty to their children. There's the legacy idea. God, work in my life, and then let your majesty show to my children's and my grandchildren's. Success is possible. He says, let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and confirm for us the work of our hands. Yes, confirm the work of our hands. Wow. He's talking about your life and my life, because the work of your hands is different than the work of my hands. We are all spiritual snowflakes. You see, God, in a sense, is offering all of us a chance to be a blessing on all of our lives. It doesn't really matter who we are. I love what Chip Ingram writes about this verse. He says, this is the way of saying, we want to know your work. We want to know your power. We want to encounter you in our lives and our future posterity. We don't want to live off other people's stories of what God has done for them. He said, we don't just want to hear of how God is working in other families and other places. We want to be our experience, and we want to pass it on to the next generation. And even though we may not be missionaries or pastors, we can all cry out for God to establish the work of our hands. Moses' final words are amazing. He is asking God to take, he said, even the mundane and the regular grind of life and allow it to be used for his glory and for our good. Success is possible. You see, it's just basic, fundamental truths. But are those truths what you've built your life on? God is great. Life is short. Sin is serious. Wisdom is essential. Grace and mercy are available. And success is possible. You know, we live in a world of a lot of failing words. You hear them every single day. Broken promises. Empty vows. All the time. Those children are going to hear it for the rest of their lives. People that say one thing and never really deliver. You'll never hear a failing word from God. David said in Psalm 12, the words of the Lord are pure words. Well, this morning through Moses, the Lord has spoken to you. Six basic truths. The only question is, are you really listening?
You've been listening to Pastor Bill Gephardt on the radio ministry of Fellowship in the Word. If you ever miss one of our broadcasts, or maybe you would just like to listen to the message one more time, remember that you can go to a great website called oneplace.com. That's oneplace.com, and you can listen to Fellowship in the Word online. At that website, you will find not only today's broadcast, but also many of our previous audio programs as well. At Fellowship in the Word, we are thankful for those who financially support our ministry and make this broadcast possible. We ask all of our listeners to prayerfully consider how you might help this radio ministry continue its broadcast on this radio station by supporting us monthly or with just a one-time gift. Support for our ministry can be sent to Fellowship in the Word, 4600 Clearview Parkway, Metairie, Louisiana, 7006. If you would be interested in hearing today's message in its original format, that is, as a sermon that Pastor Bill delivered during a Sunday morning service at Fellowship Bible Church, then you should visit our website, fbcnola.org. That's fbcnola.org. At our website, you will find hundreds of Pastor Bill's sermons. You can browse through our sermon archives to find the sermon series you are looking for, or you can search by title. Once you find the message you are looking for, you can listen online, or if you prefer, you can download the sermon and listen at your own convenience. And remember, you can do all of this absolutely free of charge. Once again, our website is fbcnola.org. For Pastor Bill Gebhardt, I'm Jason Gebhardt, thanking you for listening to Fellowship in the Word.